Hi, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I'm giving you a quick shot of romance, but author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight, I am joined by Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hello.
And we are welcoming author Faith Hunter to the podcast. Welcome to the podcast.
I am so excited and nervous to be here, but I am looking forward to y'all stumping me with questions that I can't answer, and hopefully we'll all have a good time and laugh together.
Oh, no stumping is going to happen. Don't you worry. Faith Hunter, urban fantasy writer, was born in Louisiana and raised all over the South. Hunter fell in love with reading in fifth grade and best loved sci-fi, fantasy, and gothic mystery. She decided to become a writer in high school when a teacher told her she had talent. Now she writes full-time, tries to keep house, as a workaholic with a passion for RV travel, Japanese maples, orchids, whitewater kayaking, and writing. She and her husband love to RV to whitewater rivers all over the Southeast. So Japanese maples, that just,
yes.
I love a Japanese maple.
I adore them. I've got at least 30 in my yard.
Oh my.
In various stages of age, and right now very dry and trying to keep them watered through this drought. But I fell in love with them about 10 years ago, and I have not looked back. And my husband kept saying for the very longest time, please don't buy any more of these trees. Please don't buy any more of these trees. And I said, I have a place for all of them. Mm-hmm. So as long as they're not in your way, I don't think that you should have anything to say about it.
There you go. I like that logic.
So he got very quiet, and I said, the backyard is yours, the lawn is yours, but the beds are mine. And these spots here are mine, and these spots here are mine. Those are mine, totally. Mm-hmm. And he agreed.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So what drew you to write fantasy as a writer?
A lot of things. I have written all sorts of stuff, always with a nice, strong, romantic twist to them. But during the late 90s, there was something called a Black Thursday.
Okay.
We were at a romance and mystery convention, and one who shall remain nameless, one publisher gathered all of its writers around the table for breakfast and fired them.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my.
So all of these authors had come to this event. Fortunately, it was not my publisher, but they dumped everybody except, well, one author. They kept one author sitting at the table.
Oh my goodness.
This was a group of people who wrote mystery with a blend of romance in it. Not anything hot and heavy, not thrillers, but mystery with sort of a cozy romantic line to it. And it was horrible. And a lot of full-time writers lost their jobs. This was before self-publishing was a way to even begin to make a living. So at that point, I began to drift in my thoughts to what's coming next. And I was reading a lot of everything. I read a lot of romance. I read a lot of thrillers. I read a lot of, you name it, I read it.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to try my skill set at fantasy. I had written thrillers for women. I had written a medical thriller series. I had done all kinds of stuff. And I thought, all right, let's see if I can write fantasy. And I wrote the Rogue Mage series, which was a really amazing opportunity for me. It went to auction. It did very well. And it led me into Jane Yellowrock series, which is a 15 book plus many compilations series, and then into the Soulwood series. And then, those things have all come together with Unpredictable Magic, which blends my PI love of writing and reading with fantasy and just the beginnings of a little romance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, what made you publish and sell that first book?
Back when I was writing as Gwen,
Because
I
you
have
have
been,
multiple pen names, and so it's been an adventure.
yes, the original name that I published under was Gary Hunter, and I had been trying to be published as Gwen for about 4 years, sending books out, and nobody was biting, and I met this cop who had just come out from undercover in the emergency room one night. I worked in a hospital in what I kindly refer to as godforsaken nowhere. And he came in and he had been undercover for drugs in the county, and his cover had sort of been blown. So he was in uniform. And we got to talking, and I said, so what do you do besides being a cop? And he said, I want to write a book. I said, interesting. I said, I have something for you to read. I'll bring it next weekend. And so I brought a short story that had won an award in a local college and actually won money. So I brought it to him and he read it. I whited out my name. That's how long ago it was. I used whited out my name and gave him the story. And he said, he got to the end and my name was at the very bottom. He said, you wrote this. I said, yeah. He said, we need to talk. I said, I have a feeling we do. So I invited him to my house. We had a long talk. And I said, what do you think? What's your first opening scene if we were going to write this book? And he described this scene. And I said, oh, I'm not going to get it exactly, but it was the kind of room that only a raising could cure, a place of slow-moving roaches and graffiti and the smell of mold and age and disuse, something like that. And it was a cop on a stakeout in an empty apartment looking out the window. So that led us to write Death Sentence, or no, Death Warrant. That was the name of it. And we published it. It was published. It was picked up exactly 1 week after I sent the book out. Wow.
Wow,
Yeah.
that's impressive.
It was very impressive in the 90s. Very impressive. I didn't have an agent. I had to get an agent post haste, which was a post haste is appropriate for the time in case you didn't
Yes,
catch
no.
that. So I got an agent the next day by making phone calls. And Jeff Jerique at, I can't remember the name of the agency, took us on and we wrote two books with him. And then I split off from Gary Hunter. The cop's name, by the way, was Gary Lovely, but I split off from him and went on to write as Gwen Hunter until that dark and depressing day when the publishing world began to change drastically and fast. So I became Faith Hunter.
So fascinating.
That's a journey.
Oh my.
It's wild.
Is there a piece of advice that present author you would give past author you?
Yes, write more romance. No, seriously. As a female writer, I'm always going to have a predominance of female readers. And while my female audience loves the action and the adventure and the private investigator stuff and the bringing in of the cops and the medical and all of the different things I can offer, women like a little more romance than I used to write. And I think I would up my romance. I'm great at romantic tension. I'm the queen of romantic tension. I should have used that. But to make a book really good for that demographic, that female demographic, I would also have had to write a little bit of sex. And since I laugh every time I write the word penis, it's not going to work. The fade to dark had to work for me. And or 1 foot on the floor style of romance. So I would have told myself, learn how to write sex that doesn't make you giggle. And And just accept that your mother will never forgive you for it. That's the advice right there.
There you go. So when you're crafting your stories, do you plot them out and are you a planner or do you pants?
Originally, I was heavy, heavy plotter.
Okay.
My first big book, which was Betrayal, was a 32-page single-spaced outline
Oh my.
in the character's voice.
Okay.
And my agent, Jeff Chirique, sold that book at the book fair in Germany
Okay.
to Holland, France, and Germany, and the UK
Okay.
before he pulled it and said, I'm not doing anything else until we put this book up for auction in the US, which he did. And that book was really fabulous. The three books in that saga were fabulously successful for me. And then my publishing house in America was purchased by someone else, and they did not give me an editor I could work with, so I did not stay with them.
Okay.
I couldn't work with the guy they gave me. It was not
W. Oh, sorry.
successful. It just was not successful for me.
Yeah. Do
Sometimes
you now write less outline heavy?
the outlines have gotten shorter and shorter.
Yeah.
32 pages was a lot, but I was able to bring it down. I think the next one was like 28, and then the next one was 16.
Okay.
The most recent book, Unpredictable Magic, was three paragraphs.
Okay.
So it was very, very tight. And such bare bones. But when I write a book, I take that outline and it's opened on one screen. I have multiple screens going, and that outline is open on one screen. And as I do one part, I flesh it out. I take it from the book, I take it from the outline to the book, I flesh it out, and then I record what happened back on the outline so I can keep track of it. And I'll say, chapter one. Page such and such, if I'm keeping track of pages. And so my outlines end up being longer than they start out now. Instead of the other way, when I would finish something, I would highlighter in dark gray so I didn't have to look at how many that part's done. So it's sort of reversed procedure. But I need to keep track of what I'm writing because I get so involved in character arcs that sometimes I forget the structure that I have set up for books. And most of my outlines are structure. It's kind of like basket weaving. You make the frame of the basket, and that's the plot line. And then the weaving is how the characters react to things and how they grow through the book. They start out small, like the bottom of a basket, and they have to grow because the framework's getting larger and it's bigger than they can control, so they have to grow as characters. So this basket grows up out of it, around it. And suddenly, when you're finished, now all you have to do is loop it together at the top, and you've got a useful finished book slash basket.
Are there any writing rituals or habits that you have that help you stay focused?
Tea.
Just
I
tea.
drink a lot of tea. I mean, I drink way too much tea to the point that I didn't sleep last night because I drank so much tea yesterday. I'm in the rewrite section on a book, and to stay focused because I'm having to, I'm not just starting at the top and working through. I'm interspersing new plot lines and strengthening existing plot lines and cutting one plot line they didn't like. And so it's requiring intense focus, and I am drinking tea literally by the gallon a day.
Oh
It's bad for me, but I'm staying focused. I'm getting things done. So go
but
me, go tea.
it
It
tastes
is,
good while you're doing it though.
yes, it does. Yes, it does. And right now, because it's hot in the South, I only drink one pot of tea before lunchtime, and after lunchtime, then I go to the iced tea, which is what I'm at now, and I make my own mixtures and my own whatever versions of tea that I like. And so today I'm on Golden Monkey and Louisiane with twists of fresh chocolate mint in the bottom.
Ooh, that is fancy.
It sounds fancy. It's really not. It was stuff that's left over in the tea pantry.
Like I went scrounging around in the cabinet to see what I could mix.
I absolutely did that. And I do that with lemonade and everything else. I'll mix teas in with my lemonade. So
I do like a flavored lemonade. Yeah.
I have one which is a blood orange.
Oh, I love a blood orange. Oh,
Oh, it's
man.
so good. And so when I make my lemonade, I have been chopping up some navel orange slices and putting that in it too, and then putting the tea in, taking it all out onto my front porch
Dundee.
and letting it sit in the sun,
Oh, I
which
love it.
is, yes. Yeah, that's what
When
I've
I
been
was
doing.
growing up, our neighbor, she made sun tea all the time. And it was like one of the things I mean, she made these amazing cookies as well. So like we would go for the cookies and the sun tea. I mean, we
Yes.
were there almost every day anyway, because she just lived like across the field.
I love it.
But yeah, it was the cookies and the sun tea, because I love a good cup of like a good cup of good sun tea.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so now you know about my tea habit.
No, that's fine. These are the things that we love to hear about. Yes.
I'm not going to go into rehab for it. I'm just telling you.
Of
I have no intent of
ever
having one
stopping.
day free. I'm sorry, I'm not going to hold up my one day coin or my 1 month coin. I've got my tea. I'm addicted to it. I know that, and I'm keeping it. So just you can tell all of your people that Faith is an addict and it's tea.
There could be worse things.
This is true. So I would assume you're still a reader. Is there a
Yes.
subgenre or a genre of book that you are reading right now?
Yes, I am reading. I'm not going to say it right. Her name is RJ Blaine, and she's a romance writer. And I think the one that the series I'm reading now, they're disconnected books, but they're all in the same sort of motif, which
World.
is a romance with a body count.
Oh.
And so her character, it's full of action, it's full of adventure, it's full of silly snark, and it is a
It's
palate
right up our
cleanser.
alley.
Oh, y'all would love RJ. She's a hoot. I have to give you her contact information, but I have been reading all of her books in a row. I tend to get fixated on a writer. I spent the summer of COVID reading all 52 that were in existence at that time of J.D. Robb's books,
Oh, I'm a
beginning
big
to
fan.
end,
Amanda is a huge
nonstop.
fan.
And 3 months. Oh, I love her. I have always loved her. I loved her when she was Nora. I still love her when she's Nora. I've got two new ones that I too new to me that I've got on my reader. Don't ask me what they are. I've forgotten. I haven't gotten to them because right now I need that palate cleanser that RJ's bringing me with the romance with a body count. But it's funny and it takes me out of my own head. So that's where I am.
Oh, those sound delightful. Amanda is a huge Nora Roberts fan.
Yes, I am.
She was my go-to person for many, many years after I got old enough. Now, because she wasn't around when I was younger. When I was young, it was Georgette Heyer.
Oh, I think I've read those.
You have read them?
So my mom got she would get the Harlequins, and she was a
Yes.
huge romance reader. So I was reading
Right.
romance at like 12, 13 years old,
Yeah,
because
me too.
and so my mom like had a very wide variety of books, but I believe I've read those, because she had like a grand span of different authors.
My favorite book by her was published in 1950, long before I was born, but it was called The Grand Sophie. And the reason that I liked it was that the female character gave me my first hint that females could be witty and strong and put their foot down, because all of the things I had read before in the Harlequin romance were sort of simpering,
Yeah.
the waiting to be discovered. This woman was, she
Was
was
not.
different. Oh
Yeah.
no,
Oh.
she was.
She gave you that
She
permission.
gave you permission. And since it was written in the 50s, it was very much unexpected to be that character. And honestly, she led me into seeing female characters as strong.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and that carries over because all of your female heroines are strong. Like, I'm a very big Jane fan,
Yeah,
so.
Jane might be a little stronger than strong. She's kind of scary
I love
sometimes.
her. I love her.
But good. I'm glad you're fond of her. She makes an appearance.
She does. I was very excited about the appearances she makes in Unpredictable Magic.
I hope
So.
that the fans like seeing her 20 years down the road.
Yes.
I hope that they like it so much that they buy a lot of the books, because I've just started the next one in what I think will be a series with Angie Baby and EJ
Oh,
with their
yay.
PR firm. And it opens with a scene with the Dark Queen slash Jane Yellowrock
Yeah.
and the new character who, well, she's not new to the series, but she will. In this form, she will be new to the readers, Shiloh Everhart
Yeah.
Stone.
I was very excited to see where she's at now down the road after the Jane Yellowrock series. So I'm very excited about all of it.
So on that segue, Unpredictable Magic comes out
Yes.
14th, 2026. This is a new series, but it's clearly spun off of an old series, and
Right.
we're revisiting some characters. So my question is, what was the inspiration for the world in which these books take place?
Well, first off, fans kept saying, I want more Soulwood. And I had to explain that my personal editor passed away of a massive heart attack
Oh my.
just before I wrote the last Soulwood novel, while I was writing the last Jane Yellowrock novel. So I had to stop both series. I cannot write them without her. Editorial input has always been important to these series. And this particular editor, she was my personal editor, not my editor at Penguin Random House, Ace Rock, not that editor, but the personal one. And she was also my world keeper. So she kept the Bible, which was 600 plus pages, single spaced, by the time she passed away. Yeah. So those had to stop. And I have some fan pages. I just went on the fan pages and said, okay, if I don't write this, what do you want to see? The overwhelming majority wanted to see Angie Baby and EJ and where they were going. So I said, okay, it's got to be in the future. I can't write picking it up right away because I can't write children's novels. But I can give these adult people, a voice that is new and different, but it can't be the voice that is in existence for readers now. So how do I take these people and break them enough without destroying them, because that's what makes characters and humans stronger, is being driven to the edge and coming through. How do I make them strong enough without breaking them that they will become interesting to my readers? So I created the Witch War, or the Demon War, if you will, where interdimensional creatures come through and possess humans, much like demons would. And I put EJ, little boy that he was, into the war, and I put Jane, married to a really not pleasant person here in the States. So the book begins 2 years after that has ended. That war has ended and the world is being rebuilt. And I love starting from things that are broken, a world
Yeah.
that's broken, a character that's broken, a system that's broken, and people fix it. Because I don't care what anybody thinks about politics or religion or any of those things. People fix things. People have the opportunity, especially in this country, we have the opportunity to fix what's broken. We have that choice. And that's why it's set in the US 20 years in the future, where the entire world has been broken and changed. And yet people are evolving and surviving, and in this case, using their magic to build a new world up from the ashes of an old one in some cases.
Well, and there's still elements of that old war, like
Yes.
people still trying to like bring that back, bring it back in a sense, or
Yeah.
trying to take over again. And so it's like, but there's just so many pieces to these stories that are, how do you keep all of the magic straight in the elements of the characters and the creatures? And because you have vampires and witches and all these different elemental beings, how do you keep those straight?
In a lot of cases, I go back to the Bible that
Okay.
Jerry Lee wrote, and I pull them out and I go, okay, what is this character's strengths and weaknesses? How am I going to change them 20 years down the road? I have a new Bible maker, so she took this book and turned it into a Bible for me. It's totally separate from the other. So I might have multiple screens open on my two big screens. I might have multiple, files open on my two big screens, and I make them small so they're each one of them partially open, and I can click to make them bigger to go in to find something in that, and then I can click that one down and I can pull up another one and I can find a
So
character
there's a lot
there.
of cross-referencing.
Oh man, there's a lot of cross-referencing. And recently, there was something that wasn't in any of the Bibles that I could pull open. And I had to just do a search through all of the Jane Yellowrock files. It took forever because I was spelling it wrong.
Oh,
Yeah. And so, okay, then maybe that's not the way I spelled it. How do I spell it? Let me go back to the Bible. Maybe this spelling, that's not it. What about this spelling? All right, so now I've got to go back through everything and try all of these spellings again. It took me 4 hours
oh
to
my.
find this tiny little bit of information, but I knew if I didn't get this right, somebody,
Somebody will point it out.
and not just somebody, because I have people who have written their own Bibles, and they will come back and say, I'm sorry, but on page such and such in book 13, you said this. And I have to go, yeah, I screwed up. In fact, readers caught one thing early on in the Jane Yellowrock books, is that I killed a character 3 times. And that's how Jane ended up time jumping, because it was the only way I could make it make sense that she kept reappearing after she died.
Oh my goodness.
You're like, it wasn't a mistake. I meant to do it the whole
She,
time.
exactly. And I told people later, I didn't lie about it. I brought her back to life, and after I killed her, the only way
Oopsie.
I could do it was this.
I mean,
I
hey, you
went.
do what you have to do. But that was
It
one thing when you have those dedicated readers who are so invested in your stories, like they're truly invested.
They really are. And they want to know, did Jane have a baby? Why did you never let Jane and Bruiser have a baby? And I don't know why you didn't leave her with Rick. He was perfect for her. He was sexy.
No.
Bruiser is not. Bruiser is
No.
not sexy. I
Clearly,
want
Amanda
him.
has feelings on that one.
Yes. Well,
I'm Team Bruiser, 100% Team Bruiser, all the way.
the original intent, Amanda, it was it to be a three book deal. That was just going to be three books. It was a trilogy. And she was going to ride off into the sunset on her bikes with Rick, who was going to stop. And that was before he did his thing.
Oh,
The
okay.
third
Well,
book.
I'm still mad at him. He showed up in this book and I was like, "Oh, I'm glad you're old looking."
He's suffered a lot. He suffered a lot for his
Clearly, rightfully so.
yes, yes. Well, I had to get her away from him because he was not a happily ever after kind of guy. He never was. He was his ethics were, let's just say they were moderately to extremely compromised. So I had to make sure that Jane was protected. So I had to make this division and torture him enough that the readers would go, okay, yeah, Breezer's good. But I still have fans who say it was a mistake. I should that Rick paid the price for his sins, and I should have forgiven him and put him back with her. And they want me to get rid of Breezer to this day and put him back, put her back with Rick. But Rick has Leanne Rittel, who is I believe a werecheater. And he's with her at the end of the Soulwood books.
A
Yeah.
weird
No,
cheeto.
I'm definitely Team Bruiser. When he made a brief appearance on the comms in this book, I was like, yes.
Oh, the opening scene of the next book. If the publisher lets me open a scene with these old characters, and I hope they will, he's on scene.
Oh,
Jane's
I
on
love him.
scene.
Yay.
Shiloh's on scene, Coon's on scene. All of the old characters are on scene, and there will have to be at least three scenes with them on page. So,
Well,
I'm.
publishers, if you're listening, we want it.
Yes, Amanda's opinion is super important.
Go, Amanda. I
I'm
like
just
that.
kidding. It totally is. Because honestly, so the podcast itself, like we didn't really do any like romanticy fantasy books. Like I read PNR and things like that. But Amanda came in to join us and was like, listen, you need to read this book. And I'm like, I don't know about that. And she's like, just read this book. So any romanticy or urban fantasy, we always like Amanda's like, just read this and you will tr just trust me. And we're like, okay.
I love it. I love it. Good for you. Because that's, as I said, that's my palate cleanser. I have to get away, totally away from what I'm writing, and be free when I'm away from my computer. So, but I will admit, big secret, maybe not, I have a book that has been accepted by Ace, and is currently in rewrites, and it's something totally different in no world I've ever written. And one of the characters is human and 28 years old. It's from two points of view. The other character is 78 years old and a magic user. And they have to save the world from a bad guy. And it is, I call it a dark cozy, because the romance is all about people in their 70s, because my 28-year-old character has just found out that her fiance has cheated and she has left him. Yeah. So my
Interesting.
romance is with the 78-year-old sexaholic named Mabel. Yeah.
Yes, Mabel,
Yes.
I love
Mabel.
that.
All Mabel wants to do is think about her fainting couch in hers and Marvin's bedroom, because she
Abel
has,
and Marvin. I
yes, and
love that.
she has role-playing games all set up for them, and she thinks about it all the way through the book when we're in her point of view. She's going, oh, I bet I could use that on the fainting couch.
Think I love
So
Mabel already, and we haven't
Mabel's
even met her.
adorable. Mabel's adorable, but her magic is she accidentally transmogrifies other creatures into creatures with wings. And she transmogrified a group of buzzards into dragons and gave wings to a herd of goats. And now she can't get rid of them, because if she lets them free, they go and burn things up. So the goats have to be kept in a goat pen with a roof, because if they get free, the last time they got free, they flew to Clemson University and destroyed their natural habitat for the plants.
Wait, when is this
Yeah,
book coming
this is,
out? Like, we
yeah,
don't even need to
I,
talk about Unpredictable
it's,
Magic anymore. I
yeah,
need
it's,
this
I'm
book.
have, it's going to come out, I hope, in next year. That's because it's being worked on. But back to Unpredictable Magic, that comes out in
I
like
need
4 days.
Mabel.
You're going to get Mabel.
I need
Yeah, that's
Mabel
fun.
and dragon goats. Like,
Yes, Mabel's
okay.
adorable, and so are the goats.
I mean, I love my, like, in a book, I love when you have like an ornery or like
Oh yeah.
extraordinary, like fantastic, like older character in a book.
Yeah, yeah,
There's just
yeah.
something about it.
Oh, Mabel's tough.
I think I want to be Mabel when I grow up.
Oh well, you might would prefer to be Dany. She's also in her 70s and grew up with Mabel, and Dany's gift is blowing things up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and she's a black belt, and she's the guts of their PI firm. I gotta have a
Oh,
little
their
PI in
PI.
there.
That's so much
Yeah,
fun.
yeah.
That's so
So it's an
exciting. I am
old
really excited
people.
about that.
Yeah, you'll have to come back and talk about that one when it comes
I'll do
out.
that. I'll do that.
Yeah.
I'll
No,
make
that
sure you
sounds
get,
fantastic.
I'll make sure you guys get
Yes.
version of it, so you can,
Yay.
do
Oh,
your thing with
yes.
it. But
Oh,
back
man.
to Unpredictable Magic,
Yes. So one thing I really loved about this book is the relationship with EJ and Angie. Like they're like, 'cause a lot of times when you get series with siblings, like there's tension, there's things like that, but they really like protect each other, like love each other and have a really great I mean, she does tell him he's overbearing sometimes in the protection side, but
Yes.
that was one thing I really enjoyed is like they work really well together and you don't always get that.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of backstory if you've read the Jane Yellowrock series, where their magic was accidentally tied together because Angie had to either use her brother's magic and know that they would live or give them a chance to survive, and couldn't ask his real permission because he was a toddler. So their magic is slightly entwined. She thinks she's got them separated. She thinks they're totally separated, but EJ's made sure they're not because she saved his life. It was a survival instinct. It was one of those things that a child would do. This kept me safe. I'm not letting go of it. It might be a pacifier. It might be a stuffed animal they keep until they're 18 or whatever it is. And in EJ's case, it was this little tiny strand of his sister's magic he never let go of. So to him, working together is this childhood thing. To her, working together is, oh, I've got my brother back. We
Yeah, then they
have,
both have like secrets, things that have happened to them that they haven't
yes,
shared with each other yet. And the way
yes.
that that all plays out and they kind of discover it while things are happening in this book was like, it was really well done. And I think it just tied them even closer.
Thank you. I wanted them to be not necessarily best friends, but find that they are important to one another, important enough to stay together, important enough to fight for a future where they can use their strengths and help each other through their weaknesses. I think that's something that was very important to me when I wrote the book, the first book. Less important in the second novel because we have introduced Shiloh. We've taken Walter out of the immediate picture. He's still in Chattanooga, but he's not their bodyguard anymore. Shiloh is now their on-site bodyguard, and Shiloh's kind of psycho.
He's a hot
So
mess.
the relationship has to change because there's another family member on site. Shiloh is their, what is she, their cousin. And so with her on site, with her own extremely abnormal, deranged version of magic, their relationship has to change. And
Yeah,
of
and then it also
course,
helps the coven, their own
yes,
little coven form, which is important as
right.
well.
I wanted that strength. And there's a certain strength in three, in the magic system from all the way back in the first Jane Yellowrock novels. I began talking about the power of three and bringing them together, bringing people together, and not necessarily submitting to one another. That's maybe a little too religious for where I'm going, but to agree to work together, to place their trust in one another. So that is to use all of their gifts together, and that means opening themselves to one another and using their talents together. And that power of three, I did need another Everhart on site. So Shiloh does not appear until, what was it, like page 300 or something
It
like
was
that. It's
pretty
all
late, yeah.
it's a long freaking book.
Well, but
It doesn't feel that long,
it
though.
doesn't feel that long, but also Walter's story arc is very important
It
throughout
is.
this
It
book as
is.
well. And so, like,
It
he's one
is.
of those side characters who really is not a side character at all.
The original version of the book, which was only 150 pages when I turned it in for the editor to look at it and say, yes, we want to buy this book, was from three points of view. It was, and Walter's was one of them. But the editor said they felt culturally that this was not something I should do. And I certainly accepted that because I knew it was an extreme risk all along that it would be something that might be controversial. So I went back, and all of the scenes written from Walter's point of view are now written from other characters' point of view. And their job is to, the other characters have to help Walter through unrecognized, unrealized damage from trauma. And all the way through, I won't say what happened at the end, but all the way through, the evidence of his trauma is staring them in the face and
Quite
staring the
literally.
reader, literally staring the reader in the face. And it's not just happenstance that it's there. It can't be. It cannot be happenstance. So when that comes out, how it's all tied together. Yeah, he's the pivotal character in the entire novel, and he's not a point of view character. So I needed another character to come into play, and that's why Shiloh came in toward the last third of the book. Cousin Wacko.
But it's one of those things where, like, you introduce these other characters in, like, those big moments. Like, it makes sense. Like, there's reason, there's thought, there's, like, purpose to them showing up. It's not like, hey, I'm coming for a visit and I'm just gonna stick around type of thing. Like, there's a lot going on when she shows up. I mean,
Yeah,
there's a
she
lot
makes
going on in this whole book.
yeah, and Shiloh likes making grand entrances.
She does.
Yeah, jumping off of a nine-story building. That's pretty extreme right there.
I have to ask, because Lee and I were talking about this before we started recording, but like in the Jane Yellowrock books, and you brought it over into this, it's like the blood duel. Like they're so intricate. Does this just come to you in your brain? Do you have to like plan that out on paper? Do you have action figures? How does that work? Like
Oh, so you're talking about the actual fight scenes. My husband took some unrecognized, well, it's recognized, it shall not be mentioned, form of street fighting when he was 18, because he just decided he needed to know how to protect himself. And my brother and both nephews, his two sons, are black belts in Taekwondo. So I have people handy who can
Act it out for you.
act it out for me or show me things. Plus, I have a very I used to love pirate books and Errol Flynn,
Yeah, the
sword
swashbuckling.
fighting, the
Yes.
swashbuckling stuff. Yeah, I loved it. And I would watch those and I would critique them as a child and go, that was stupid. He left himself wide open. And here I was just a kid. But even I knew that one slight move, or if you had another blade, that person's gone.
Yeah.
So, in my own way, I would absorb all of these fights from television and from movies, and I put them together in first in the Rogue Mage series, where my character is fighting with swords and with religion-based type of magic, and the swords and the battles were against non-human creatures for the most part. So it was easier if the other person had a different type of weapon, and I was able to begin to envision these fight scenes so that when I brought sword fighting to the Sangre Duelo, or the blood duels, in the Jane Yellowrock series, I was able to ask the necessary questions and envision. And I would stand up, my husband would walk through and catch me with my arm, one arm up with one, and doing this. And he would just kind of roll his eyes. It got to the point where he didn't even ask what I was doing. He just rolled his eyes and
And
kept
just
on
kept
going.
walking.
And so, yeah. And then we did yoga, and there's an awfully lot of yoga and Tai Chi that are battle based. And of course, Tai Chi was originally an exercise based on fighting, and fighting based on exercise. They were combined. And so, just doing Tai Chi, all of the motions are about conserving your own energy and taking your energy back into yourself and breathing and keeping your stance rooted. So, doing a little bit of that and a little bit of yoga, it led me to understand how you would hold a sword, how you would, where you were open. How do I avoid being open in this motion? And then also that these fights are really fast. They're not prolonged. You don't dance upstairs like they did in the Errol Flynn stuff. But I had characters who could jump up there. And I had to deal with that in terms of what the rules were for fighting and the Sangre Duelo, and what does the challenger get to do and choose, and what does the challenged get to do, and how does the king avoid being challenged person on person. And you see that for the first time, well, for the second time, but it's set up more clearly in Unpredictable Magic, where you see video of one of these situations. And I just had a ball doing it. And like I said, I have my husband on scene, and I would go upstairs and say, here's a knife. And he would say, yes, I see that. And I say, I want you to knock it out of my hand. And he would. And it was a dull knife. I have one I use on roots in my gardening. And so he would slap my hand, and it's a particular two-hand motion where you hit the wrist where the person defending against the knife hits the knife wielder's wrist and the back of the knife wielder's hand. So the inside of the wrist and the back of the hand, which bends the hand inward,
So they drop.
and it causes them to, if they don't drop it, you then have another hand to come down on top of that bent wrist, and you can break the wrist. So it's two hands to stop it, and one hand, and I just held it out to him. He didn't even think. He just did it. I
He's
said,
used to it by now.
Oh crap. Okay. So, all right, let's do that in slow motion, please. And
Amazing.
he had to think about what he had done, because
Just
it did, he
natural
just
reaction.
natural to do it. And so I held it out, and I said, all right, so let me get my feet in the proper position, because right foot back, step forward with right foot, the knife wielder would step forward, and stab forward at the same time because that blades the right side of your body away. See, I watch my Errol Flynn. You turn the right side of your body so that you can come back with the left side.
And
And it's
those of you
this
who can't see, she
swinging,
is acting this out
walking
in her
motion. Yes, I'm
chair.
acting it out for y'all so that you can see what happens. But yeah, we would act out these sorts of things. But the
That's
knife
awesome.
flying out of my hand was a surprise because I had a grip.
Yeah, you thought you had it.
I wasn't just, using it to cut my salad. I had a grip, and he took it out of my hand without even. I couldn't even focus on what he did, but it was
That's
gone.
amazing.
But
That's fascinating.
so that's one way is that I have someone on hand, but then I used to call my brother and say, okay, crazy question. What is the move you do if somebody's doing such and such? What would you do to stop it?
And then he
And
would tell you.
he would tell me. And then he would walk me through it. And a couple of times he had to come over rolling his eyes. What are you doing? I said, I need
And
to
be
know.
like, do it in
Just
slow motion so I can
do
type
it.
it as you're doing it.
Exactly. And so he would do that for me.
I thought there
Yes.
had to be like some acting out or some like just intricate, detailed description because they're very like when I read it plays out like a movie in my head. And so like
Right.
I'm like watching an action movie as I'm reading these books
Yes.
always. And I was like, there has to be like some process behind this. So thank you
Well,
for giving us the sword lesson.
it's the same thing with writing sex scenes, which is why I can't do it. I'm sorry. It's when you're watching the movie in your head, it's just not sexy. It's too, you have to follow too
Yeah,
many
it's
moves,
too
which is
clinical for
why
you.
when I
Gotcha.
try to write a sex scene, it just makes me laugh. I can't do it.
Well, that's okay because what you're doing is working.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
So, what is next for you?
Well, we have the untitled, it's not titled. I don't think they're going to accept this title. Right now, it's Second Chances and Flying Goats.
Oh my God, I love that
So
title.
that's the title that I'm
That
working
is
with.
honestly, if they don't pick it up, you need to write it anyway. Just because I really need Mabel.
Oh,
Really.
well, they're leaving Mabel in. All the book is finished. It's in
Okay.
the
Just not the
process of
titles.
just I don't know. I don't know if they're going to take the title.
I mean, they
And
should because that is amazing.
then I will write the book that I have just
So, book two of this
book
series.
two of
Okay.
the Unpredictable Magic series. And then I may go back and write another one in Mabel's world if the fans like it. I don't know.
I mean, if people don't like
Okay.
Mabel, they're crazy.
I think they're
Because
crazy
again, we
because
haven't met her and I love her already.
oh, Mabel's a hoot. Mabel dyes her hair, and Mabel demands things of the people in her life, and Mabel makes sure she saves the people in her life,
Well, even
and
better.
she's the one that has unpredictable magic.
There we go.
Yeah, because
Well,
if she lets loose, whatever she's mad at is going to end up with
watch
wings.
out, goats.
Okay, right. Oh my goodness.
Well,
But in the
thank
meantime,
you.
you have Angie
That's
and
true. I do have
EJ.
Angie and EJ
Yes,
and Walter. I
yes,
did love me some
yes.
Walter. He was delightful.
Walter can grow now.
Yeah.
Walter can begin to heal from his trauma.
He can. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and stopping by and chatting with us. We have appreciated it.
Yes.
Thank you for the insightful questions and helping me to relax because I was terribly nervous
I
starting
told you,
this.
we told you nothing to be worried about. It is very low key.
I appreciate that, and you have been really nice, and thank you.
Well, you are very welcome. And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.